Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how the devil are you doing? What's going on?
I'm good. I have gone. I feel like one of the. Is it Billy Baldwin who was in the film? Is it Billy Baldwin, the one who was in the film Sliver, where he lives in a hotel and he's got loads of screens in front of him, and he basically watches all the security cameras in the hotel? Well, there's a website called insecam.org, and it's basically insecure webcams. So people who've set up cameras around the world, and none of the information is A, encrypted or password protected. And there are some of the most boring webcams you've ever seen in your life. It's just people like basically shooting a webcam outside their front door or in a field or in front of like a 3D printer to see whether it's working or not. Or I've seen a horse this morning. And it just basically goes through all of these very mundane sights. Because when you sort of like look at a webcam or look at like a scene in a different country, it doesn't give you real life, does it? It doesn't give you the mundanity of real life. But this website very much does. It basically says, hey, the world is effing boring.
What is this, your new addiction of the week? Where you're not buying just like Toyota like Donaldson, taxis from Japan.
It's the most boring. It's the most boring bit of voyeur work anyone could possibly have. Just watching like people's like security shutters and stuff, like making sure they're closed, and a lot of horse camera action. People don't seem to be scared about having their horses viewed
is there
on the
Japan?
Internet. There is. There's a few, but they're all like someone's pointed like a webcam at the Shinkansen LED readers in like a train station. So basically just so I can find out almost immediately. There's 644 in Tokyo. And obviously it's dark at the moment in Tokyo. Mm. So a lot of them are very, very dark indeed. There's one in like a ramen shop. I'm watching people having a bit of dinner. It really is fascinating stuff. And people need to know that it's important to secure your cameras. Just make sure that nobody... Make sure that Petey Peepers can't see your stuff, all right?
I like that a lot. Presumably, these are webcams that are deliberately set up. They haven't been, like, hacked and just stuck on there, have they?
No, I mean, they've been deliberately set up for... I think it's mainly sort of making sure that shutters have been pulled down at the end of a working day in a shop, and so they've put these webcams up and I'm Petey Peepers having a look.
Well, now we know who the seedy people are that go on that website. Now we know the sorts of people.
I'm watching.
It's Pete Donaldson.
I'm watching.
Well, I've just got back from a very long week filming with Natsuki around Kyoto, Osaka, and Nara. Maybe if you're watching one of your weird camera feeds, you'll see us bumbling around a train station in Nara. But it was good. Natsuki, as I mentioned briefly last week, Natsuki hasn't explored Kyoto, Osaka, and Nara before. He's been to like Kyoto two or three times, but never really as a tourist. Last time he was there was for the bar that we had back in March, which was fun. But like this time we got to see the big bad stuff like Arashiyama Bamboo Forest, Kinkakuji Temple, Fushimi Inari Shrines. It was good. But my God, it was very, very busy. I ran into a lot of viewers. I think every day I ran into about 30 people. I feel bad for anyone that ran into me in the last week, because when I'm like filming stuff and they're like, "Hello, Chris," I'm like, "I need to get the shot."
Because you're going to be there for the next 5 minutes, aren't you, really? It's kind of hard to, and I understand it, but some people kind of understand it, I think. Some people sort of understand that they, you know, that you're working and stuff, but
I got angry at one point. I don't, you know, if you're a viewer of Abroad Japan or a podcast,
don't touch me.
By all means, come and say hello.
Don't touch me. I'm busy.
Don't look at me. I you know, it's great running into folks who either listen to the podcast, watch on YouTube, whatever, and it's been good fun. There was two guys that annoyed me a little bit though. They didn't know who I was, but they pulled out their YouTube and they brought up a video thumbnail with my face in it.
Yeah.
And then they walked over to me while I was really busy trying to get the shot of Natsuki. And they were like, "Is this you? Are you this YouTuber?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they went, "Can we have a photo?" And I went, "No." And I was like, "You don't know who I am. You've just seen me on YouTube and just assumed that maybe I'm famous or something or good. Well, I'm not." And that superficiality kind of pissed me off. In the end, I basically went, "No." And then he looked really like shocked. And I went, "Oh, go on then, quickly." So he got his photo anyway.
Right.
But that was a sort of interaction that pisses me off, you know. I don't go up to YouTubers, or I've never watched their videos or content, or don't know. Or celebrities in any way, shape, or form, actors off the TV, if I ever see them, I don't just walk over and go, "Are you famous? I saw you in a book once. Can I get a photo?"
I think sometimes.
I just find that really annoying.
I mean, obviously, your behavior there was disgusting, but.
Entitled YouTuber.
I would say that, like, I think the saddest thing about people who are well known, people don't want to really say hello anymore. They just want a little picture so they can put it online and take a bit. You know, it's the new signature. I mean, signatures presumably were quicker to administer back in the day, because you just run up with your bit of paper, get a signature, and then run off. Anyway, but like, I just think that, like, they don't. And also, I found, being a grey man who no one knows who I am, I've maybe spoken about it before, but if you're ever kind of like, you know, I used to work for a radio station, I was a radio DJ, and so I spent a lot of time on the ground in, I used to be a contender, but not, but I used to spend a lot of time on the ground at like music festivals and stuff, interviewing like acts, but also like just walking around doing like pieces to camera and stuff, and people... Like, if you're carrying, like, a camera equipment around a busy kind of site, people do sort of go, "Oh, they must be, they're doing something important. They must be doing something important." And then they look at him, they look at me, who's doing the hosting. They go, "Well, I don't know who he is." And they get really, like, annoyed that they don't know who I am. Like, it's like the arrogance of him not to be, I don't know, Dermot from X Factor. The arrogance for him to walk around with a microphone and a camera crew and a clipboard. How dare he do that? How dare he? So it's just all that, really. That's the thing that always makes me laugh. Go, "Well, I've never seen him. I've never heard of him before. Go and find out who he is. Go on." "No, never heard of him. Disgusting." But maybe that's the British.
Maybe that's a British thing. I don't know. I think you're wrong, though, on the signature front. Like, I prefer photos, because it's kind of like, hold the phone up, take a photo, job done. That's fine with me. I met a guy in Don Quixote in Shibuya once, and he was like, "I want to get a signature." And I was like, "Wow, you're the first person who wanted that," apart from the books, of course. So I was like, "What do you want me to sign?" And he's like, "Can you sign my arm?" And I was like, "This feels pointless, because when you wash your arm, the signature will disappear."
It feels exploitative, writing on anybody part, one would suggest.
Yeah.
Unless you're in Motley Crue and you're signing a boob or a bum.
Well, it felt like we walked around the store for about 3 minutes trying to find a pen, because we weren't on the stationery floor. We finally found a fucking pen. And then I was like, "Okay, right, are we ready to go and sign something?" I was really busy. I was filming something at the time. I was like, "All right." And everyone was waiting on me. The production team were like, "Hurry up, Chris."
Yeah.
So I was like, "Okay, what are we signing? What are we doing?" And he's like, "Oh, actually, I've changed my mind. Can we take a photo?" I was like, "Oh, fuck, I'll kill you.
This guy's a live wire. We got a live one there."
So I took a photo with him, and I just looked really stern and annoyed for wasting so much time, and we should have got the photo in the first place.
Yeah, that's a shame.
And again, he didn't really seem to know who I was. It was, if you're watching or listening to this, do come and say hello to me, to Natsuki, if you ever see us. It was really fun. We met like a good 30, 40 people, and one guy was really lucky, got the full set. Mm. They got a photo of Natsuki and I standing on a bridge in Osaka.
Nice.
And then the next day, they bumped into Connor in Hiroshima.
Yeah.
And they got a photo with him. And then there was another person. One girl bumped into us in Kyoto and Nara and then Osaka.
Right.
And didn't ask for a photo the first two times. By the third time, she thought it was an act of God.
Yeah.
That we brought him to air.
Yeah.
Again, the third time between Kyoto, Nara, and Osaka. So we gladly
gotta
took
get
the
out
photo.
The way.
Nice. It was God's will to get that photo. So, but Natsuki had a blast in Osaka. He was, you know, as a bit of a party man, a bit of an eccentric character himself. You'd sort of think he's from Osaka, and so I was really shocked that he'd never really been there before. And he loved it. Yeah, he loved the Dotonbori area with all the lights and stuff where we filmed our video together. It's for a video, like an itinerary video, where we're basically doing a video called sort of 2 weeks in Japan, 14 days in Japan. It's coming out next week.
Nice.
And it's about the, you know, what to do in Japan when you come here for the first time. Often, you know, as you know, all the videos we've made over the years are very eccentric, weird locations, like the tomb of Jesus Christ in Aomori that you'll never go to, or an obscure mountain in Kyushu. So this is finally a video that is going to hopefully help people who are coming here for the first time and don't want to go and see eccentric places like the Tomb of Christ, but want to do a more conventional route. And yeah, hopefully.
It's a big shout, isn't it? Tomb of Christ. It's a big shout.
Got to go up there and have a look again and see how it's doing. We got a story this week from... Do they have a name, Pete?
Do they have a name? We've got a story from... Is it? No. I'm on the wrong bit.
No.
Ignore what I just said. Ignore what I was about to say, for crying out loud. Yes, it's...
Right, we'll call
No, we don't have a name. We don't have a name.
We'll call him Mike. All right.
Killer
Hello
Mike.
From Seattle.
Right.
Both my wife and I love the podcast. Story time. My wife and I went on our third Japan trip this past August, and even though we knew it was going to be super hot and humid, we're excited to be back after the COVID shutdowns. We were there for about 9 days, buzzing around and sweating more than we even thought possible. Now, I'm a big fan of Japanese whiskey and had done the Yamazaki distillery tour on a prior trip. At the distillery, I got to try Yamazaki 25, which was incredible. However, buying a bottle is basically impossible due to its rarity and price. Yeah, it's a good point, actually. A good reason to go to a distillery if you like your whiskey. They have very rare sort of bottles that you can't buy or get
like investment bottles at that as well. It's like people, if you're not going to drink it yourself, I think it's kind of the amount of times I've went, whenever I see like a Hibiki 25, I'm like, I gotta have a glass, gotta have a glass, even though it's 40 quid, gotta have a glass, never gonna have it again.
Oh my god. And that's where all of Pete's money has gone over the years. Since that day, since the day of drinking the Yamazaki 25, I keep my eye out for the elusive bottle, and on this trip, we sought respite from the sweltering heat in the Shinjuku Don Quixote with its fantastic aircon. all good stories seem to be a Don Quixote in this episode. As I tried to assume some sort of normal body temperature, I found myself perusing the premium alcohol section when suddenly my eyes hit upon a bottle of the Yamazaki 25. However, I called over to my wife, and we calculated it was marked at an acceptable, far from prohibitive amount of money. Good old Don Quixote. Excited, I motioned over to the store clerk, ecstatic with my find. As he removed it from the case, he raised his eyebrow and asked, "Is this amount okay?" I replied, "Yeah, I think so." With my credit card already in my hand, poised, ready to swipe. The clerk hesitated for a moment. Oh my God. The clerk hesitated for a moment and whisked out a calculator and said, "This amount in US money." My stomach dropped. What I thought was an almost 1,300 bottle of whiskey. Jesus, that would have been expensive alone.
Yeah.
What I thought was a $1,300 bottle of whiskey was in fact a $13,000 bottle of whiskey. I'm pretty sure my wife nearly passed out, and I quickly apologized, repeating no and making for the exit. Moral of the story, be careful during the currency conversions in your head while likely dealing with heat stroke and dehydration. My God, $13,000.
Even tax-free. Even tax-free, that's a bit much, isn't it? I remember going into a really fancy, one of those crappy sort of Mayfair nightclubs that are built into the base of a hotel that's just full of like people who just don't enjoy fun, but they enjoy bottle service and stuff like that. I remember behind the bar there, this big, like, beautiful bottle of Hennessy brandy, and I was like, I'm gonna have a shot of that. I think that looks lovely. And he went, 400 quid for a shot.
Oh,
and I was like,
God.
And I was with like a partner I'd been seeing for a very short amount of time, and I was a bit like, oh God, maybe I should do it just for a laugh. But I didn't do it. And to me, that shows growth, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, those whiskies are insanely expensive. But can you imagine, like, 13,000, like, and you just crack it open and just drink it in the street?
Yeah. That's, I mean, bossing that's it. Crazy.
Mm.
I recently
make a pickle back with it.
Somebody took me out to a restaurant and they very generously bought me a glass of Dasai sake. And Dasai is really expensive.
Right.
I think Dasai 45 is the most expensive. I'm not sure. There's a few. Yep. But Dasai is the rice, the grains of rice, really polished down really hard to give them more pure taste and whatnot. Honestly, it's a load of bollocks. I know, like, it does change the flavor and whatnot, but there's a lot of marketing behind it. And the more expensive the sake doesn't necessarily mean the better. In the same way, you know, you find with wine. But, like, I did think, my God, like, this is, it's like filtered, the sake water is filtered through the mountains of Narnia. And Christ comes out to dip his toe in the water, and the rice is polished. It's just like, all the marketing. He came out with a fucking pamphlet to describe how brilliant the sake is and how it's going to taste better than God. And then you drink it, and it's like, oh, yeah, it's all right, isn't it? It's all right. Maybe with whiskey, you can taste the difference more. Given whiskey has a stronger flavour. The thing about sake is it doesn't have that much flavour to it, right?
It has a very delicate flavour. Like, you'd have to be a real head, I think. There's so much variation in whiskey that I don't think is necessary there with sake, would it be fair to say? Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like, but like anything, any kind of like situation where you are unsure about A, conversions, and B, decimal points. Because sometimes decimal point can look like commas, and that's when you start to get a little bit in trouble. When we were in a restaurant in Tokyo, we had a delicious sushi meal, and it was like proper, like it was about as fancy as it gets sushi wise, and it was blooming great. And I was like, look, Sarah, all this food, only $60. It wasn't $60. It was some multiples of that, to the power of two. It was pretty expensive. So that'll teach me. But that's the thing. You'll never feel shortchanged in Japan because the food is always excellent. The booze is always excellent. They know what they're doing, and you never feel like you're like, if I'm in like a Wetherspoons in London and I have a pint and it tastes bad and I go, ugh, this is gross. I'm in the Wetherspoons. Like, I had a bad time. I'm not paying for that. Rubbish.
What the hell did you have at the sushi restaurant that justified the, what, $600 price tag or more than
it
that?
I think it was about $500. Might have been a little less than that, actually. But either way, I thought it was $60. It was actually a lot more. Just had to keep on giving her $100 bills, basically. I was like, oh, nuts. Luckily, I had enough money there. Jeez. But it was amazing. It was a proper, like a little tasting menu, but it was the food kept coming, and it was proper sushi prepared lovingly. So you don't resent that sort of thing. You don't resent spending like an ungodly amount of money when you've experienced something that you won't experience anywhere else. It's when you're buying Kit Kats in the 7-Eleven and it's a bit more expensive. You're like, oh, bugger off.
I think, I mean, to have a meal like that, like also like teppanyaki steak, you know, it's bloody good. I think it could come in at like $200 or $300, but if it's like a once a year birthday event or like a special treat, then I've been very lucky by doing tourism videos over the years. I've often got to eat some amazing things that have been heavily subsidized, but good Wagyu steak is probably the most expensive item, as well as Maguro tuna from Aomori as well.
Yes,
like I saw them fishing, like that bloody tuna went for $2 million a few years ago. $3.2 million, I think it was, about 5 or 6 years ago. The whole tuna, admittedly, at an auction.
But isn't that guy, he's the guy who, that's his thing, every year he spends, drops a couple of mil on a big tuna, and it's all almost ceremonial.
I love this guy. His name's the Tuna King. The Tuna King.
And the Liver King.
His name's Kiyoshi Kimura. He's a big lad, quite a big man. And all the fact, when he walked into his restaurant, Sushi's on Mine, which is very good. The tuna is exceptional.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best place to go in Japan for tuna if you don't want to go to a silly, expensive, high-end restaurant.
Yeah.
But every time you go, when you go to one of his restaurants, you're greeted with two things. Number one, a big plastic Kiyoshi Kimura, a plastic replica of the man himself, with his arms outstretched as if to say, fucking, let's go.
Let's go. Let's get tuna. Let's get fatty tuna in us.
And the second thing you'll get above the big fucking plastic Kiyoshi Kimura is a landscape panoramic image of him surrounded exclusively by about 150 women that work for the tuna restaurant chain. I think there's like three guys. Even though, like, I think most of the chefs that you'll meet in store are guys. Most of the people in that photo are women, from my memory.
Yeah,
he loves it. And
he loves it.
But the fish is very good.
Right.
And every January he would they have like the first tuna of the year at Tsukiji Fish Market, now Toyosu Fish Market, and he would bid the most for it every time, and the most he ever bid was $3 million, which is definitely way too much. The actual value of the tuna is probably closer to $200,000, but it's great for marketing, and it's a great marketing ploy. I've noticed in recent years though, since the $3 million fish, he hasn't bid that much anymore. Maybe the law of diminishing returns for
times
PR.
Times are tough for the fatty tuna king.
That's right. That's right. Also doesn't help that the fatty tuna and the tuna are disappearing because people are eating too much beef in tuna. Yeah. Well, that's a story for another day. Speaking of disappearing food, though, a lot of food. And I say food, I don't know if Kit Kats really count as food, as cuisine. Maybe they are in Japan.
Yeah.
A lot of Kit Kats have gone missing. We're not talking one Kit Kat, or three Kit Kats, or even 10. We're talking 55,000 Kit Kats in a box have gone. Pete, fill us in on the great Kit Kat heist of 2023.
Well, about $250,000 worth of chocolate Kit Kats have been held hostage, apparently. Basically, a little while ago, there was a shipment of 55,000 Kit Kats from Japan, including your fancy Kit Kats, melon, matcha latte, defukumochi, and stuff like that. And American fans of the candy are, you know, loving, obviously vibing off them, and they want to buy them because these unique flavours are only sold for a limited amount of time, so they go for a little bit more. Basically, a man called Danny Tying, is it Tying? Tying? Tying, basically had all of these Kit Kats sent to the United States. He's one of the subscription box guys who basically cobbled together all his Japanese snacks, and then they put them all together and sell them with a bit of a premium. And Japanese kind of like otaku guys, they really love these unique Japanese experiences. So it's a nice little service. Anyway, apparently, the initial shipment cost $110,000, but the Kit Kats are now in limbo. They're in some kind of weird hostage situation. When they arrived in, I think California, they were set to sort of make the journey across the continental US to New York, and this man enlisted another man who runs a freight place, paying $13,000 for the job to get all of his Kit Kats from the West Coast to the East Coast. And so then this guy who has this freight company contacted someone else to get the job done, and then he got scammed effectively, and these scammers have been taking all of these Kit Kats, hiding them away, hopefully, with global warming, not in such a warm place. Hopefully they're still refrigerated. But yeah, they basically held them to ransom. We can't find half of them. The freight company man has no idea where they've gone. The storage facility holding the goods reckoned that the person who planned this trip doesn't exist. It's all very confusing. And the Kit Kats are still in California doing nothing. Absolutely nothing. And it seems like the scammers are just having a giggle and going, I hope you found the Kit Kats, guys. So basically, all of our Kit Kats are missing. If you're a fan of the Kit Kats in America, all of the Kit Kats are missing. And I think the man who runs the subscription box company would quite like to know where they've gone.
What the hell? I mean, I was reading that this sort of theft, it's not exclusive to Kit Kat. So $30 billion of thefts last year in the US. And but Kit Kats, that's a sad day. It's a sad thing. And this is for the company Boxu, right? One of these snack box companies.
Yes.
Where you pay monthly and they send you a box of sweets or whatever. I'm still confused as to where are the Kit Kats then, Pete?
I think that's something that the man who's running Boxu is trying to ascertain, to be honest. He's trying to secure the bag of Kit Kats. I think like international logistics is quite complicated. And as a man who, I think his car has just popped itself onto a ship today. As a man who's doing some running a little import-export business, what he should have done is got into the business, the surely more profitable business of deep refrigeration, deep freeze, packeted ice cream, Japanese ice cream. If he'd have gone for the Kit Kats, it's just a little bit, they're a little bit more popular. But I think a product like Coolish might go under the radar. People don't want to steal them.
It's a very weird item to steal, I'm not going to lie. I mean, once you've stolen 55,000 Kit Kats, what do you do next? Do you start traveling the country with like a box in the car, being like,
how would you
discount matcha Kit Kats, discount wasabi Kit Kats. Where'd you get these from? Oh, I don't know. But don't read the New York Times article that's doing the rounds about the $250,000 missing Kit Kats.
But that's
what
you have to. You have to know what a flavored Kit Kat is. You, like, if I started walking around the town going, do you want these Kit Kats? I'm not telling you. Ask me no questions. I'll tell you no lies. Do you want these? This flavored Kit Kats? Did you make them yourself? Like, these don't seem like proper Kit Kats. You have to be clued into the fact that the Japanese love mad Kit Kats to buy them. Otherwise, they just look like mad Kit Kats you've made yourself.
I'm starting to feel very hungry for Kit Kats. I haven't had dinner, right?
You haven't had dinner, yeah.
I haven't had dinner. I haven't decided what I'm going to have for dinner yet.
Right.
It's the big question, right?
Yeah.
What should I get? What should I
do? Well, just make
try to be healthy.
Make like a Jenga. What you need is grab a load of Kit Kats, like 50 boxes of Kit Kats, and do like a sort of Jenga configuration up the top, right? And then in the middle, just jam a big sausage. Sausage and Kit Kat. Delicious.
Well, I think my friend is selling Kit Kats at a discount at the moment.
Exactly. Primo.
Dear, oh dear. We'll be back in just a moment, guys, with your stories, comments and questions over in the fax machine.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Wow.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got this week from our listeners? Mr. Donaldson, fill us in.
Duncan says, hi there, Chris. And Chris is a side man. Grr! Ah, Duncan!
Side man.
Ah, no. I very much... Whenever I mention any other YouTubers... There's always a fan of that YouTuber on the YouTube comments going, oh, why are the sidemen catching strays, Pete? Why? I was like, mate, I don't care. I don't care. There's a whole lot of books about yokai to be found outside of Japan, with all of the material telling you that yokai are integrated into current-day Japanese culture. I love yokai and I've read a lot about them, but when I look into Japan, its culture and locals, I see very little evidence that they are a thing in Japan. Are they just an export made popular through books, anime and cartoons outside of Japan? Or are the yokai still sneaking about in every corner of Japan doing their thing? Best regards, Duncan from the Netherlands, a man who just loves spooky ghosts.
I mean, you do see yokai-ish things.
References.
Like the only time I think I filmed it is with Pete, yourself, Pete, in Kyoto.
Yeah.
On yokai street. Where it's just a street full of... I think when we looked it up, we were desperately looking for ideas in Kyoto. We wanted something that was different. Mm. And we found a street called Yokai Street. It's a great video. And it's just... People have like little statues and sort of
effigies they've made of their own little ghosts, little characters. Yeah, they don't seem to be based on any particular mythology. But we made our own, didn't we?
No.
In 7-Eleven, I made a big balloon man, and you popped him with yours that had forks for hands. It was disgusting.
It was the highlight of Journey Across Japan. Yeah, that was, but it was a really I think only you and I would really enjoy that street. And I think when I read reviews about Yokai Street, it's a lot of reviews are like, I was underwhelmed. Imagine coming to Kyoto and not seeing Kiyomizudera Temple, the Fushimi Inari, 10,000 red lacquer shrines going up the mountain.
Yeah.
But going to a dodgy street down a back street with yokai. Like an effigy of like a banana man or whatever the bloody hell the yokais were. But that's the only time I've ever encountered yokai. And also that time... that Ryota and I stayed in the Haunted Inn up in Iwate. I'd love to go back there, actually, and do like a proper super... Maybe I should go back there. Would you watch that, Pete? Would you watch me back
at
the Haunted
that.
Inn?
Yeah. I think Kyoto is one of those things that... I think people like watching videos about Kyoto simply because they are obviously going to visit Kyoto. So finding like different stories around that gaff is probably a really good idea. What's your favourite yokai, Chris? My one's Beto Beto-san, who walks behind you on quiet forest streets, country streets, and Beto Beto-san's like kind of onomatopoeic in that Beto Beto sounds like his sandals on the floor. And if you hear Beto Beto-san, you've got to go after you, Beto Beto-san, does all, and let him walk in front of you rather than stop him from going on his journey. I really find that, I don't know why I find Beto Beto-san that's strange, but he's got to me, goddammit.
I love Tengu, the red face mask character with the big long Pinocchio-ish nose.
Right, you see him all over the place, that guy, don't you?
Everywhere. And also there's Kappa, the little Kappa river creature that lives in Iwate, in Tonno. And there's a guy there, like a 75-year-old Japanese man. He takes people on this tour of a stream, and he's like always fishing for this imaginary Kappa creature. And it's become like the most famous thing to do in South Iwate. And the TV always just says, he's really famous in this village. And I met him one time, and he took me to the river, and you have to sort of... look into the river, and he's like, oh, it's a bad day, it's not coming today. It's like, how much money has this man made out of this imaginary bloody creature? Why, this is a license to print money, this is a brilliant idea. Like, oh yeah, there's a ghost here, give me 20 quid and I'll show you in the studio where the ghosts are.
Brilliant.
Oh, it's a Thursday, the ghost doesn't come on Thursday, in hindsight you'll have to come back again, bring more money. We got a story this week from American Chris. Hello, Chris and Pete. We've got American Pete and normal Pete and normal Chris and American Chris. My wife and I have just booked our tickets for our first trip to Japan for 2 weeks for my birthday. Congratulations. We're hitting the big spots for our first trip, including Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, Nara, and perhaps some smaller pots. In Tohoku and the south. We are both bariatric surgery recipients and have very small stomachs. My God. Since it's considered rude not to finish your meal Would it be a good idea to have cards or Meishi business cards explaining that we might not be able to finish our meals? We want to be able to experience all the wonderful food without insulting everyone. Love all the work you're doing. Congratulations on the book. All the best, American Chris. Mm. We've never had this as a question, as a situation, actually.
I think we've had people concerned about not finishing meals and stuff, but I think that for this reason's actually quite unique. I don't think I've ever heard of. Is bariatric surgery the one where they put a balloon in your stomach, or is it the one that the band? It's what is either the band or the balloon? Band or balloon? If the balloons even exist? I don't know. Help!
Band or balloon?
I'm not a doctor.
I'm not entirely sure, actually. I think it might be banned, because obviously it's shrinking your stomach, isn't it?
Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe it would be a good idea to write on a bit of card here. Depends. I mean, I don't know. Depends how much you guys are ordering or eating. Maybe don't order too much. You can often order like smaller portions of rice.
Yes.
But yeah, I would say it could be good to have something, even just something on your phone, rather than a business card that you hand out. I just have something written on your phone. But honestly, people aren't going to rip your head off or care too much if you leave like food. I think people will care if it's something like a prized bit of tuna or wagyu or something like that. Then they might be like, oh, you've left the $500 steak. But I don't think... I think if
there's a load of wagyu left, that's going in my pouches and my sheets like a hamster for later. God damn it.
Yeah. Oh God. But no, I'd recommend writing something on your phone and putting it there if you are worried about it. But honestly, I don't think people care.
I mean, most places are like, apart from like ramen, most places the food is quite modular, you know, from your sushi to your chicken on sticks. Like, you can just order a couple of things and then keep going. And obviously, you know, the drinking culture out there is like drink food, and you just kind of just keep going, really. So yeah, until you're full. So, good stuff. Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely. We got one last story, or one last question, from Kevin from Colorado, who says, "Greetings, Chris and Pete. My wife and I are traveling to Japan in April, and I thought that it would be a good opportunity to tour an auto plant, purchase a K truck, and have it shipped to the US. To your knowledge, is this incredibly bureaucratic on the Japanese side? I don't speak the language, so I'm mindful of endless faxes, proof of funds, paperwork. Any advice is appreciated. Attentively, Kevin from Colorado." Well, Kevin, Pete Donaldson has done exactly that. It's not a K-truck. It's worse than that.
It's the very definition of the worst than that. Yeah.
It's just been stuffed on a boat at Yokohama Docks.
Yeah,
I mean, what was the paperwork? How did you even do it, Pete? Like, did you like without Japanese? Like,
colour of money. Just I spoke to Ken from Goonet, which is a Japanese... It's not even an auction site. I think they just link up with local dealers. It's probably not the best way to do it. I just go on you. There's a few lads who sort of... Aussies who have started their own kind of export business out there, and they're quite notable on YouTube for knowing exactly how to get stuff out. So I don't know what the process is for an American. But in the UK, it's relatively easy. You literally just buy the car, they send you the documents, I think, in the post, and then you have to register it on the tax side of things, and then you have to get it MOT'd, get it trailered to a garage, get it MOT'd, get a rear fog light in there, and you should be good to go. I mean, I think we spoke about this a couple of episodes ago, and some people were going off on the in YouTube comments that there is limitations about cars that are under 25 years old, but to keep the Japanese and US car spheres separate. I give it a YouTube, Kevin. I've got no answers for you. I'm sorry. I didn't import to the US. I imported to the UK. But Goonet, good little website that allows you to see a load of cars that you might fancy.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think you're the only person after Ludwig. I don't know how Ludwig got his K car, if he exported it or if he found it in the US, whatever. But best of luck to you, Kevin. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to RawinJapanPodcast@gmail.com, or leave a question in the YouTube comments section with hashtag FaxMachine. Whatever the way you send it in, we'll be there to find it. But for now, guys, no matter what you might be up to in the week, have yourself a good one. We'll see you right back here to do it all over again for a big announcement in the next episode on the Abroad Japan Podcast. Bye for now.
Oh my God.
Abroad in Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.